22LIW.
Alright, let me switch over to the eastern end. How's this setting?
Still a bit noisy. I guess you're on the eastern end now, and quite a bit noisier than usual, Paul. Go ahead.
Okay, well, alright. This might be a little bit better. How's that thing?
Okay, you're running a little bit more power on the western end. It's you get 10 or 15% noise right there now. Acceptable, but not perfect.
Okay, conditions. I haven't moved my antenna all week, so there you go. I'll give it a shot, Dick, okay?
Roger, Dodger. Go right ahead. K2LIW.
I put my backup fan on that radio. You know, when you're in that kind of power, I like to have an additional fan. So, very good. The this is WS2M for the Space Net report for this week's TechNet. There's one launch I'm looking forward to in about 2 weeks. It's actually going to be on February 9th, Saturday at 11 a.m. And it will be shown on NASA TV now that NASA has now reopened their you know, the government has now reopened it. That allows NASA to start normal operations with their NASA TV and with their website. And this flight is a SpaceX Falcon 9 flight with a brand new Block 5 booster. And what they're going to be launching is the Dragon Crew spacecraft. They call it Dragon version 2, but it's just the crew version. The difference is between this and a crew version is they're not going to have a crew. They're going to put this thing on top of their Falcon 9 rocket and launch from Launch Complex 39A. And, W go by. This will go up to the International Space Station. It's going to autonomously dock with the space station. It will have some small amount of supplies on board. The crew on board the space station. There's three people on board right now.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Screens. Touch screens that the crew will actually be using when they do go up. So this is going to be a dress rehearsal for the real thing that should be coming up in maybe a few months. Maybe I'm going to probably say June for the actual launch. And hopefully this one goes off on time. You know, there's been delays. You never know. This might be delayed. But right now it's scheduled for February 9th at 11 a.m. Eastern, and it's a Saturday, so most people will be able to see the thing launch. And, you know, it's got they have the 80-foot arm that swings out from the top of the tower. You know, it actually connects to the spacecraft. So the crew is there. They've been going down that walkway, what they used to call the white room in the old days, and they would be able to get into the spacecraft and take off. That spacecraft has the capability of launching 7 people. Their first flights will have 2, and then eventually work their way up to 3 on a regular basis, and then beyond that, 4, going up with 4 to the International Space Station. Once everything is approved and NASA is happy with the system that SpaceX has developed. Looking forward to that launch. A little over 2 million pounds of thrust. They did test the engines, the 9 Merlin D engines the other day from Launch Complex 39A, and that went fine. They light off the rockets, hold down, post, you know, stay in place so it doesn't go anywhere. They do that for every single flight, make sure the engines work. And they shut it down, and eventually they'll go for launch down in a couple of weeks. And then, not to be outdone, eventually Boeing will be doing something very similar. They have a Starliner that will eventually be launched from a launch complex 41. And again, they have a crew arm that will swing out to that spacecraft. And they'll be able to carry up to 4 people, actually up to 7, but they'll all be carrying up the mostly, most 4 people to the space station at a time. So once you have the Starliner from Boeing doing it on a regular basis, which will be launched on an Atlas V rocket, and Dragon crew version, which is going to be launched on the Falcon 9, the Atlas V, will be the workhorse for putting people, Americans, from USA soil instead of from Russia up to the space station. It's been a long time since 2011, so you look at eight-year hiatus. This is WS. Okay, one of the pieces of equipment that Dragon, the crew version of Dragon, brought back a couple weeks ago. They bring a lot of stuff back to the space station, around 3,000 or 4,000 pounds of stuff. You know, they'll bring science experiments back and equipment that needs to be looked at or changed out from the space station. One of the things they brought back is a malfunctioning ham radio. ARIT had sent it up quite a few years ago. You know, amateur radio on the International Space Station sent this digital TV. I still call it ATV, amateur TV, but it's really it's not analog, it's digital. And they had sent it up, and it operated right in the very beginning. I remember Tim Peake, he's an American astronaut, you know, he used call letters and sent he's the European Space Agency astronaut with American calls, you know, KG5BBI. He used it for contact with a European school contact. But then after that, it quit working. And they tried actually fixing it on station with help from the ground, but they tried different antennas. They tried a patch antenna instead of whatever they were using. Nothing seemed to work. So this year they put it on to the Dragon Dragon cargo version, sent it back to Earth, and now eventually on the way back to Italy, where it was actually manufactured. Or, you know, so they'll get it back, they'll look at it, and it'll take about a year or so before it gets back into space. There's a long delay. If something's repaired, it has to go through this couple of months testing before it's allowed to go back into space. So by the time it gets to where it's got to go, and then they got to decide if they can fix it, or they're going to replace the digital ham TV unit altogether. No, and send it back up to the space station. So I thought that was pretty interesting. That was information from the ARRL. If you get your weekly letters, you know, come in, you know, they come in on email. That was one of the topics. Let's see. European Space Agency wants to drill into the moon and eventually test to see if they could manufacture materials from the moon. They've signed a contract with a private company, the Ariane Group, to see if they to develop the equipment to do this by 2025. So they're actually going to look to we have plans for doing it too, but they're actually going to go ahead with this. There's a new rocket that's being developed. The European Space Agency uses 3 main rockets. They have a light lift rocket, a medium lift rocket, and a heavy lift rocket. The European Space Agency launches out of French Guiana, Kourou, French Guiana down in South America. And it's 3 rockets that uses the Vega rocket that comes out of Italy. It's pretty much a solid booster rocket. And then they use the Soyuz rocket. They buy Soyuz rockets from Russia, and then they rework it to their own liking. And they launch it from French Guiana. They built their own launch complex for that particular rocket. And that's their medium lift vehicle. And then they have a heavy lift vehicle, the Ariane 5. And that thing has made like 80 different flights over the years. Only one partial failure, so it's very reliable, but very expensive rocket to launch. So the European Space Agency is developing the Ariane 6, which is going to be equally as powerful, but much less expensive than the Ariane 5. In fact, they have plans on reusing the engines at some point, that are throwing them away. So the idea is to drive the cost of space travel down. And they're all competing with SpaceX. SpaceX has gotten the price down to $62 million per flight. And that's probably half the amount that NASA spends when they launch an Atlas V rocket, which is something comparable to the Falcon 9. So that's the story on that. Boeing, like I mentioned before, is going to be launching their Starliner also this year. Originally, that will go up without a crew, dock to the space station, and then come back. And eventually, they'll have a crew. I think around August of this year, they might be able to send their crew up. And they call it the Starliner. It used to be called Boeing CST-100, crew space transport. 100 they got from the Common Line, so I thought that was a good name. Common Line is roughly 62 miles above the Earth's atmosphere. So Starliner is being developed in Florida. They have three Starliners almost built. First one is going to be used for test flights, unmanned flights going up to the space station, and another one is going to be used for an abort test. They want to test an inboard flight with the Starliner and make sure that goes okay. And then the third one is going to actually have a crew on board. So they've changed one of the people that are going to be going up. Eric Bowe is now out. He got sick. Been replaced by this other fellow, Finch is going to join the other crew, Chris Ferguson. Chris Ferguson was commander on pilot on the last shuttle flight ever to fly, which was Atlantis back in 2011, and he'll be going up on the Starliner along with rookie Nicole Mann. She'll be a part of that group. So they're going to send three up on their first flight, where Dragon is going to go up with just two. So does anybody have any questions or comments before I go on? That's the WS2N. Okay, there's a rocket called the Electron rocket. That's launched by Rocket Lab. And they just got a contract with DARPA, the Defense Agency Research Projects Agency. And they're going to give this fellow, Peter Beck, he owns Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab is the one that develops Electron rockets. They call it the Electron rocket because the pumps that are used to pump the liquid oxygen in this case, liquid kerosene into the engine, usually driven by exhaust gas or a byproduct of the combustion system. The Electron rockets doesn't do that. They have the engines. The engine was called Rutherford engine. And Rutherford was a scientist, of course, from New Zealand, and the owner of the company is from New Zealand, Peter Beck. So he calls them the Rutherford engines, you know, in his honor. And the engines have 50 horsepower. Each one has a 50 horsepower pump. Pumped with electricity. He's got these brushless DC motors, nine of them, and they're all running off this one massive battery, and it's a lithium ion battery. So I read recently that if you were to add up the amount of electricity that this one battery is putting out, it would be equivalent to 1 megawatt of power. They only have to do it for about 2.5 minutes, but this massive lithium battery has that capability. And it drives these 9 pumps, this 9 engines on first stage for, each one puts out like a little over 5,000 pounds of thrust. It's not a massive rocket, you know, maybe it's, 120 feet tall or something, but this whole setup is run on batteries and electric motors, so it's kind of incredible. You gain a lot by not using a tap off on the existing combustion system to run these turbines. You've got a closed system, so that's good. But then you have to give up something. You have to give up the weight of this massive battery. I don't know what the weight on that is, but it's pretty big. The other bad thing is on the Electron rocket, it's not reusable. So you lose these things. They go down the drain. You know, they hit the water and they're gone. That's a shame. But you're losing a battery, you're losing 9 engines every time he does this. So he does launch out of the North Island of New Zealand. Lands on eventually. Maybe not this year, but he would like to get the cadence of launches up to around 1 per month and eventually 2 per month. So this particular one that's going to be going up by DARPA probably within a month or so from now. Rocket Lab is also building right now, they're building a new launch complex in Virginia. Wallops Island, Virginia right now does launch rockets. They launch the Antares rockets, for instance. They'll launch the Antares. On top of that will be the Cygnus cargo vehicle that goes up to the International Space Station a couple times a year. And from that launch complex, Wallops Island is giving Rocket Lab location, and they're building their own launch facility. So they plan on eventually launching from the United States as well. It's actually a United States company listed with us, and he's building the engines, these Rutherford engines in California. So I thought that was pretty good. You're going to have a lot of these launches. The DARPA launch, I wanted to talk about that. It's going to be a small 300-pound, very small mini satellite that the Electron rocket is going to launch. But out of it is going to come this pretty big parabolic antenna made of Kaplan. So it's going to get these poles that are come out. It's going to stretch it out to around 8 foot in diameter. And the idea is to increase the bandwidth that they can transmit on small payloads. So it's actually a test flight by DARPA to see if this antenna works. But I did see a picture of it. It was pretty good. Pretty cool. It starts up in this very small package. I mean, it's like maybe the size of a suitcase, and it opens up this massive 8 foot diameter parabolic beam antenna. So, interesting. Let me drop it for a second. Another topic I spoke to Roy about was this project that apparently NASA wants to do, or actually they're in testing it anyway. They'd like to grow hearts, real human hearts, eventually in space. So they have this traction is, it's sending up probably on a, I guess, either a Dragon or a Cygnus cargo vehicle. And apparently this thing is built by a company called TechShot, and the idea is to they could grow parts in space. You know, I guess they'd like to grow kidneys and whatever they can grow. But presently, on Earth, they need some kind of like scaffolding structure to hold all these cells in place as they're growing. And you know, the ultimate goal is to grow a human heart for a transplant. So you could eventually set up a factory up there to do that. In space, you wouldn't need the scaffolding type of equipment, I guess like a mesh to hold it together. It would just like grow all by itself. So they can get the DNA, whatever it is, start manufacturing hearts in space. That's the ultimate goal. I thought to myself, this is a great, if this worked out, and they can make all kinds of organs up in space, and they're looking around maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now, doing this on a regular basis, you could set up entire space stations manufacturing human organs for the countless millions of people on Earth that would need this stuff. So, but they're actually testing on a small scale. I read it, but I don't quite get it. I have to get more information on what this particular unit is trying to, what they're trying to do with it. But I guess they're gonna give it a shot. Some kind of 3D printed cell unit. So, I don't get it, but sounds good to me. Let me drop it. This is WSLM.
You want my 2 cents?
Oh yeah, definitely, Roy. Like I said, it's a little out there, but I mean, they're thinking about it. They're sending a small unit up. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, Paul. Basically, it's a 3D printer, but instead of just spitting out plastic filaments to make little toys for people, it spits out the primordial stem cells from the donor, so that you don't have to worry about a immune problem with a stranger's cells. So you culture stem cells from a person, the idea, and you set up this 3D printer that prints primordial stem cells in a matrix of some kind and give it nutrients and push it towards the development of certain cell lines, and you can build your own organs that you won't reject. It's a wonderful idea. On Earth's gravity, you need definitely scaffolding. You probably need some scaffolding for microgravity as well, and the technology is many, many years in the future. Organs are rather complicated structures, that they're not uniform, and so you have to have different stem cells or different ways of coaxing them into differentiation. So it's an exciting possibility. I don't know if it'll come to anything. It might. My problem is the cost per heart would be semi-ridiculous considering the constraints of getting it up to the space station. But it's a fascinating research study.
Oh, okay, very good. Yeah, okay, now I see what they're doing. They're actually going to take the person's own cells and start with that. I guess they're trying to do that here on Earth. They must have some kind of success with it. Has anything actually ever been built on Earth? I've seen these on science fiction movies, but have they actually gotten anything where they, to the point where they could actually implant something into a person? I know it's not the heart, of course. That's not done yet. But I guess this is the way to go. Whatever happened to the Java card? And after that, I think a few years ago, they tried making mechanical hearts, and I just, that's not working out. Back to you, Roy. WS2.
Yeah, they're still working on mechanical hearts, but it's not ready for prime time. Transplants are the way to go. They're working on ways to blind our immune system.
to non-human hearts and reconfiguring them and all kinds of things. They've done a 3D printing of stem cells using some kind of fabric or matrix that it feeds into. I'm sure you saw the picture of the mouse with an ear on its back. That was part of that experiment as well. For the cartilage in the shape of a mouse was printed and then was put into a mouse to get the cell linings and such. And I don't know exactly what became of that, but they're trying to do it on Earth a lot. The problem, as they cited in the article that you sent me, was that gravity is not our friend. The scaffolding starts to fail after a time.
Okay, very good. Well, I hope they have success with this one unit that they're sending up. If that works out, you know, then they'll go full blast. As far as the cost goes, you know, if companies like SpaceX, I worry about them, though. You know, they're laying people off recently. But if they could do what they said, actually make space flights much cheaper, that would help. And there's other companies with big rockets that are doing the same thing. Blue Origin, for one, will have a massive rocket about the size of the Saturn V rocket. And that will also be reusable. Usability is the way to go. Without that, you're never going to drive the price down. But very good. Thanks for that, Roy. Anything else?
Paul, unfortunately, I think we're going to need something like a space elevator to make any of this cost effective.
Oh, it's that bad, huh? Okay. That's not good. You mean we're only going to have 3D printed hearts and lungs for the rich?
Paul, you say life ain't fair.
Yeah, QSL. Very good. Talking about driving price down, SpaceX is working on their next spaceship, and that's what they call it. They call it spaceship. They call it Starship. Starship is going to be this massive, eventually when it's built, much bigger than the Saturn V. Saturn V put out 7.5 million pounds of thrust. Their version was put out, the smaller version, probably 10 million pounds of thrust. So they're working on it. And right now they're down in Boca Chica, Texas, which is near the Mexican-Texas border, a town down there. And they're putting together an early model of the Starship that's building. It's called the Starship Hopper. So it's going to be much shorter than the final version. Maybe 100, I don't know, looks like around 125, 150 feet tall. And he had it all standing up, and it looked okay. You know, I saw a couple of pictures of it down in Texas. And it blew over in the wind. They got like 40 mile an hour winds. It separated the top part from the engine compartment. He was going to start installing tanks. He wants to put in a liquid methane tank. Most rockets run on kerosene or liquid hydrogen. This one's going to run on liquid methane and liquid oxygen. He was going to start.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Over in the wind. Said it's going to take a little time to fix it. I mean, I saw pictures of the thing laying on the ground, and it looked like it was made out of, tin foil. This thing's all bent up, so I think you're going to have to trash that one and start all over again. But you never know with Elon Musk. He might have a way out of it to try to rebend that metal. So I don't know what went wrong. He didn't have something supported properly. Only a 40 mile an hour wind at the top of this thing. He doesn't have a VAV building, like a vertical in Florida, Cape Canaveral. They don't have that. This is out in the open building thing. Like massive, like you would build a massive tank, you know, massive storage gas tank, some way of constructing that type of thing. So, seems to me like he's rushing.
1YDY with a question.
YDY, go ahead.
Paul, I know this is not directly related to the Starship Hopper, but speaking of lower cost to orbit, whatever became of the Dream Chaser?
Well, that's being developed. Still being developed. That is being built by SNC, Sierra Nevada Corporation. And as of last year, I guess probably probably June or July, they took it on a test. They brought it up to 10,000 feet on a helicopter and dropped it, and it successfully landed. You know, it's got two wheels in the back, and it's got the skid plate in the front for instead of wheels in the front. No problem, landed perfectly, which Sierra Nevada Corporation was very happy about it because their earlier version, back in 2013, I think they tried a similar type of thing. And everything went fine. They dropped it from the helicopter, but when it got down to the runway, one of the wheels had broken. It was the port wheel collapsed and it rolled on, you know, onto the side, created a lot of damage, and delayed the whole program quite a bit. Let me drop it. So they put it up. And the reason for it is they use a smaller, undersized wheel carriage for the wheels. They got it out of a jet somewhere, and they used that. That was the permanent plan, but now they went to the permanent plan, a much simpler system, and everything worked fine. But anybody that doesn't know, the Dream Chaser is about, I think, 1/8 the size of space shuttle. It's about 30 feet long, and it's got these Delta type wings. It will launch eventually on an Atlas V rocket, or they're actually developing it where they could launch it on a Falcon 9 or even an Ariane 5 rocket. But for now, it's going to be put into a fairing, encapsulated in the top of an Ariane 5 rocket. This will probably be within a year and a half, 2 years, they'll do that first flight. And the wings in the back actually fold up to fit inside the fairing. And then after it gets to orbit, the back wings open up, and then also the solar panel comes out from it to supply the power. It's going to be able to carry a lot of mass up to the International Space Station, more than all these other ones. Let me drop it. Like Progress brings up around 6,000 pounds. SpaceX brings up around 6,500. Cygnus brings up around 7,500 pounds. This thing will be able to bring up around 12,000 pounds. So it will have the capability of either docking or berthing with the International Space Station. That means they could, you know, if they berth it, they could bring out large components, big scientific piece of equipment into the space station. And then if they just use it for docking, they could bring out smaller stuff. It's a cargo vehicle for now, but they're developing it into a vehicle that will be able to carry 7 people. Original design was for people. That was the idea of it. But NASA chose Boeing and SpaceX for the original contracts for people. And then a couple of years went by, and NASA needed contracts also for cargo vehicles, and they were using SpaceX and they were using Orbital ATK at the time, now it's owned by Northrop Grumman, for the Cygnus vehicle. And they were bringing the cargo up to the space station without people. But then NASA feels there's so much cargo that needs to go up. We need another vehicle or another backup. So they gave Sierra Nevada Corporation that next contract for cargo. So that's why they're developing the cargo version of the Dream Chaser first. It'll go up, dock with the space station, do what it has to do, and all autonomously, all by itself, not a crew, and then eventually come back and land in any runway it wants to. I mean, it's a smaller vehicle, it's about 30 feet long, and they'll be able to do just that. So that's the story on Dream Chaser. It's under development. I'm going to guess a year and a half, maybe you'll start to see a lot more about it. Back to you, this is WS2N.
Okay, thank you very much, and one way to way.
Very good. So, I'll be happy to see Dream Chaser go up as well, because that's the way to go. I mean, you know, you got Dragon that's going to be bringing a crew back, and that's going to be like the Apollo and Gemini days. They're going to be landing in the ocean, you know, and then they have a special boat. SpaceX does, it's going to pick the people up, you know, pick up the whole spacecraft, and the crew will get out. And then you have Boeing, and they're not going to land in the water, they're going to land on the ground, but how they're going to do it, they're going to land in the desert of Utah, out in the middle of nowhere, and as they come down, they get big airbags that are going to inflate, you know, to soften the blow when they get very close to the land, at the very bottom. So, you know, I'm a big shuttle fan, and I'd like to see that Dream Chaser, you know, work. And that has the capability, once you have a crew, of also being able to carry seven people. So they all have that capability, seven people for Starliner, seven people for Dragon, and seven people for Dream Chaser once that gets developed. All right, let me continue on here. A few minutes left. Drop it. Another spacecraft that has gone up recently, last week, was the New Shepard. New Shepard is being developed by Blue Origin, and that was a successful flight. I got to see that on the webcast. And they're the ones that launch out of Van Horn, Texas. And this is the 10th flight for Shepard. This is the third. First one, yeah, this is the third iteration of the Shepard. First one, very first one, didn't make it, and that was when it was under development. And the second one took flight after flight, and they did five different flights to space with that one. And it goes up, it comes back down, and lands vertically. After, you know, when it first goes up, it has a spacecraft or a capsule on top, which will eventually have a crew of six, and that separates and comes down in the desert of Texas with parachutes. So these are suborbital flights, but it qualifies because they go above the Kármán line. So they'll get above the 62-mile limit. So it went up successfully last week. Spacecraft parts separated promptly, came down in three big parachutes, landed in the desert, and the booster itself was returned, came back to a launch pad in Texas, really where it was, where it took off. And it only has one engine, a BE-3 engine, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engine, and very successful. And they will eventually put a test crew on board by the end of the year. And, this is their 10th flight, the third version, and this is the fourth time this one particular one flew. Last time it flew was about 6 months ago. So, Blue Origin is doing good. I mean, this is their suborbital flight. They, like I mentioned before, they're building another rocket called the New Glenn, which is going to be like about as big as the Saturn V rocket down in Florida. They've already built a facility in Florida, and that's where they're going to build these big rockets that will eventually take off from Launch Complex 36. They've taken that launch complex over. Everybody's taken a launch complex over down in Florida, and then they'll land out in the ocean. So that's the story. Don't have much more time here, so I'll just leave it open for any comments or questions. This is WS2. Okay, nothing else. If anybody's looking for that opportunity, there's the Mars rover that was launched in 2003 and landed in 2004. Hasn't been heard of. Heard from, wound up in a sand or dust storm on Mars back in October. And it's solar panels, and it definitely didn't have enough light, and they think the batteries went so dead that they're not going to hear from it again. They keep trying, though. Any comments, questions? If not, I'm going to turn it over to Dick and see if he has anything to say. For the end of the night here, we're getting close. This is WS2N. Dick?
Hi, thank you, Paul. Okay. Once again, we're going to end a couple of minutes early. And we've had some pretty good coverage from both science and space. 73, you all. See you later. Next week. And I'll turn it back over to Roy if he has any final comments, and maybe he wants to reissue the email address. AC2GS, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yes, thank you, Dick. Yes, once again, if you have any topics, any questions, any comments, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And for links of articles that are the basis of my presentations, you can go to your browser and type in roy.ac2gs.com, and it will give you all the links. And if Kay is still out there listening, I kind of looked up the difference between spectrometers and spectroscopes and spectrographs, and I think that was the question that you asked. And a spectrometer is more interested in the intensity and polarity and frequency of a given light, as opposed to a spectroscope and a spectrograph that are more interested in the general spectrum of light given off or absorbed by different materials. So with that in mind, I want to thank everyone once again for helping me by participating in this, and I always look forward to people participating, and hopefully we'll have some interesting things again for next week. So this is AC2GS. Have a great week, and I'm clear.
Thank you, Roy. Bye-bye, Paul. K2IW clear, but listening. See you guys next week.
Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73. And good night from the WQVL repeater. At 8:30, welcome to the WQVL repeater. Net tonight at 8:30, this is the WQVL amateur radio repeater system. Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System. Time is 5 a.m. Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system. Welcome to the WQVL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the WQVL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
Thank you.
Net tonight at 8:30 WQVL repeater system.
I went Saturday, one of the members of Great South Bay, they brought their trailer over to the house from the club, and they had winter field day, so I made like three contacts. I was there for about an hour because I had to go take my nephew to something with baseball. So I had a ball. Only thing is, I went to get on the air yesterday morning, and my dipole came down. It snapped on the right leg, or the right leg, I guess from the wind and the rain. So I have to get it fixed. I have to get the guy to help me or get some of the other people from the club. But I got my random wire. That works pretty good, but if that was raised up more with a rope, I would be fine probably with that. But I did all right with it this morning. Back to you.
Good. Yeah, I didn't, I got on Saturday morning and I just wanted to see how the activity was, and things seemed pretty dead. That pretty much what you found?
At 2 Saturday all the way till 2, and then the next day you would have a lot of stations coming in on winter field day.
Yeah, I did hear a lot of activity yesterday. I mean, I even heard a lot of European stations coming in, which was nice. I'm glad you had fun, and sorry to hear about your dive hole. But with the winds, I guess it's to be expected.
We should have left some slack. I mean, we should use bungee cords or a spring for swaying. I don't know. I have a 9-to-1 Ballon I bought to make a ring, like an NFET antenna. You could buy it with it. I just bought this for $30, and I'm trying to research what the length is, and I thought about using that. I got the coax, take down the other antenna, and, just take another wire. Just buy wire at Home Depot. But I think you have to have a counterpoise on it. I'm trying to research it. They also got these Delta loop antennas they make, like MFJ. They're pricey, but you can put that in an apartment, like where you have, to be stealth in an attic. Do those work pretty well?
Yeah, I've heard people having great success with them. Of course, nothing personal, but you might want to check on the net and ask how many other people have used them.
Back to the guy's house, NO2C. Him and his wife are like really, really serious operators, like just cranking out DX. And I got to his house, he has horses, him and his wife. They got one horse. They got a barn in the back. And I couldn't believe it. I was really surprised. I thought this guy would have all these fancy, beams and everything. All he had was a